In the 80s, the term environmental justice was coined down in North Carolina as we looked at the issues around waste and hazardous waste. And later on, the study showed that across the United States, primarily people of color first and then the poor were disproportionately cited for heavy-duty environmental contaminants in their communities. So today we see that 9 out of 10 African American communities, for the African Americans for the most part, are living in contaminated neighborhoods. And that's not just African Americans, it's people of color, Latinos, Asians, indigenous populations, our Native Americans, those who are residing such as in North Dakota and Minnesota, where uranium mines are actually threatening their water consumption and way of life.
So in a lot of these cases, which came first? Was it industries are drawn to these neighborhoods because they feel like they can get away with these things? Or were the industries there and people bought property that was affordable and then realized that there were all these concerns?
There are a couple of things. In the early, and this is one of the reasons why our organization was moved to file a petition on the in the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights with respect to a community of Mossville, which is located in Louisiana, just outside of Lake Charles. In that particular case, as with many cases like Mossville, you had communities that were settled at the end of or during the completion of slavery, if you will. Some of those communities are unincorporated, right? And so therefore they're paying taxes but not receiving the representation that they are so justly due. In a case like Mossville, it was a very pristine community, rich in biodiversity. There were 5 families that started that community in the 1790s. And then the industries came. In the case of Louisville, the same thing. And again, you have to understand the nature of the time, because we were talking about segregation, and therefore the land use planning laws were dictated by the politics of the time. In the case of Louisville, the chemical plants came after the communities were located there, and they clustered themselves.
I mean, does this come down to land use planning? I guess in a perfect world, we would have, you know, an industrial sector, and that would be where all the plants and industry and, you know, power plants were. And what's the solution?
No, that is not the solution. Today we have, you know, as science has evolved, we are seeing that there are proven safe alternatives. Today there is no need to produce these egregious chemicals. We now have 80,000 chemicals in the market. Only 200 and some of those chemicals have been tested, and 5 have been regulated. So today we are seeing that, yes, there are proven technologies where we can change. Also, yes, it is land use planning practices. We do need to reform the way we site these places. But as on top of that, we do not need these toxic chemicals in our air, water, soil. And also our Department of Health, our Department of Justice, they all play a role in the way in which our chemical policies, our environmental policies, as well as the Environmental Protection Agency.
Well, speaking of those federal agencies, I think it was last week a bunch of them signed an agreement, an environmental justice agreement. Do you see that helping this any?
You know, absolutely. It's a good first step. I do believe that in signing this memorandum of understanding, the agencies are seeing that they really must be even more so intentional. But unless we change our laws, unless we change the way that we regulate, we right now, it's the law for a combination of facilities to be located near a community where people are in school, where people are in church, where people are in hospitals, if you will. Unless we change our laws, that memorandum of understanding, even though it is with good intention, will go for naught.
Michelle Roberts, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you so much.